The reading is from 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 4 to 15. The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." Solomon answered, "You have shown me great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life." Then Solomon awoke, and he realized it had been a dream. He returned to Jerusalem, stood before the Ark of the Lord's Covenant, and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then he gave a feast for all his court.
Thank you, Joe. Lord, give Jo the words that you have prepared for her this morning. Give her words that will feed us. Give her the life that you have given her into our existences this morning. Help her to speak for you, that you may have glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Good morning. So, King Solomon. Just to give you a little bit of a background, and thank you for Keith and Jill for reading that sort of story earlier that summarised Solomon's life, basically. But to give you a little bit of a background to this character, he was David's son, King David, who we heard about last week. Does anybody know who his mother was? Bathsheba. And what's significant about Bathsheba? Do you remember from last week? Bathsheba was the woman that David committed adultery with. And if you remember, the youth did the little scenario with the little play that they did up there. And David realized that actually he was in the wrong. And their first son actually died. Solomon was a subsequent son of David and Bathsheba. But I wonder what it was like growing up in that court. Because David didn't just have one wife, he had a lot of wives. I think it was sort of acceptable in those days to have lots of wives, particularly if you're a king. But if you imagine you're a king and you had lots of wives, you would have lots of sons. And all of these sons would have been thinking, "Oh, when dad's dead, I'm going to be king." And already, by the time that David had died, there'd been several attempted coups and attempted takeovers for the kingdom. So this young prince comes along, and he has been chosen by David to be the next king of Israel. And yet he's already had to face down opposition, quite violent opposition, from one or two of his brothers. So you imagine you're in this situation. Your dad has just died. You are now the king of Israel. And a genie in a bottle pops up and says, I give you three wishes. Actually, that's not how it worked. He had a dream, and God said to him, what one thing would you like to help you to rule this kingdom? If you were in that position, what would you choose? Death to all your enemies? Peaceful reign? Strong armies so that you could actually control this rebellious country? Solomon doesn't go for any of this, does he? He says, I would like to choose wisdom. Give me a discerning heart so I actually know what on earth I'm going to do with this bunch of rebellious people. He didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for power. He didn't ask for death of his enemies. He didn't ask for a long life. He asked for wisdom. And God was really pleased with this answer. And he said, because you have asked first for wisdom, I'm going to add on to you these other things, the power and the wealth as well. And I think that if we look back at Solomon's life, these are probably the three main things that stand out: his power, his wealth, his wisdom. Those are really the things that he is famous for. So we're going to look at these different aspects. So Solomon was obviously the third and actually the last king of the United Kingdom of Israel. He came after Saul and then after David. And he was given power. He expanded and he strengthened the empire. And he, one of the biggest demonstrations of his power was when he built this, the temple. Now, this had been a dream of his father David. His father had been desperate to build the temple, but for various reasons was not able to do this. Because building a temple required certain things. It was quite an undertaking. It would require money, it would require a peaceful kingdom, influence, and it had to be the right time for God. But it says in Kings that in the 480th year after the Israelites came out of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, the second month, he began to build the temple of the Lord. So he didn't hang around. It was just 4 years after he took over that he started building this temple, and it took him 7 years. And I think that, to me, is a real indication of the power and the influence that this guy had. But it was the 19th century historian Lord Acton that says, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Because considering he was a wise man, he did some really stupid things, one of which he married too many women. And he had a lot of wives, and most of them were pagan wives. And that went directly against God's advice to say, don't, or God's rules to say, don't marry, intermarry with pagan women, because they will take you away from me. But this is what Solomon did. He also excessively worked his people and turned them against him. So he was the most powerful man in the world, but ultimately his power failed him, because what happened after his death was that his kingdom was torn apart. And in civil war, it was split in two, with his son Rehoboam leading Judah and Jeroboam leading Israel in the north. So when we're thinking about power and powerful people, just a little bit of fun now. Can anyone tell me who is considered the most powerful man in the world currently? Not quite. No? Obama, he's in the top three. Any ideas? Nope. Nope. I'll give you a clue. I know. Putin is considered the most powerful person in the world currently. Who's the second most powerful person?
Obama?
Nope. It's actually a woman. Yep. Second most powerful person in the world. Who's the third most powerful person? I think Obama. And it'd be interesting to see if Trump does appear in the top three in the years to come. But what's very interesting, isn't it, is that there's this guy. Who's that? Castro. Now, he could have been considered one of the most powerful and influential men in the world. He died yesterday, age 90. Where is his power now? The point is that you can be incredibly powerful in this world, but actually, we all die. We will all die. The most powerful people in the world will eventually all die. It's a fact of life. Power in this life is temporary. So, how about King Solomon's wealth? Well, it says in 1 Kings that actually King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth, and he was a very effective trader, and he was a patron of the arts. So how rich was King Solomon? Well, let's again look to modern day society. So we've got the Forbes rich list, and the top three, they're all men in this list. I'll give you a clue. So who do you think is the top number one Forbes rich list person who is worth the most? Bill Gates. Do you know how much he's worth? He is worth $75 billion. Okay. And he's obviously, his company is Microsoft. Anybody know who number two is? Nope, it's not. Zuckerberg's not in here. Nope. Don't think so. I'll give you a clue. Anybody know who that is? Heads up Zara Company. He's a chap called Amancio Ortega, who I hadn't heard of. He's worth $67 billion. And in third place for Berkshire Hathaway is this chap Warren Buffett, worth $61 billion. Now, somebody's actually calculated how much King Solomon would be worth in today's currency. Has anybody got any idea where he would appear in that top three rich list? Yeah. He would be worth over $100 billion in today's currency. This is a seriously wealthy guy, to be even richer than Bill Gates. That's rich. But Jesus said, even the lilies of the field outstripped him in their glory. You see, his wealth was temporary. War is expensive, and I'd imagine that the civil war that came after his death pretty much decimated the wealth that he'd built up. Wild flowers of the field, they're beautiful, aren't they? But they fade quickly. And just as wealth might appear beautiful, but it fades quickly. Well, so much for power, so much for wisdom, so much for wealth. What about wisdom? Well, Solomon requested wisdom in a dream from God. So by reputation, he is now the wisest man that ever lived. If you Google wisest man ever lived, Solomon pops up in the answer box. And I think this story that we heard about a little bit earlier sort of illustrates, it's a fairly gruesome story, isn't it, where he's threatening to cut this baby in half. But essentially two women were claiming that their baby was their own, or one baby was their own. So Solomon said, fine, get me a sword, I'll chop the child in half. And the true mother obviously says, no, don't do that, give the other woman the child. And so Solomon realized, or could tell from that, that mother was the true mother. And it says in 1 Kings that Solomon's wisdom was greater than all the wisdom of all the people in the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. And he wrote many of the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, and some Psalms. It says in Kings more than 3,000 Proverbs and 1,005 Psalms. So that's quite a lot of work he did, as well as being a king. And he wrote these in order to gain wisdom and instruction and to understand words of insight. And I think it's great, isn't it, today, because we've got the book of Proverbs and there's some real crackers in there. Has anybody got any favourite Proverbs?
Wisdom is a light unto the wise, but trying to teach stupid people is a waste of time.
That's a good one. Yeah, does everybody hear that? Wisdom is a light to the wise, but trying to teach a stupid person is a waste of time. I picked out a few of my favourites. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. Wine is a mocker, strong liquor, a rowdy. Anyone led astray by it is unwise. And better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. And they're great, aren't they? Because they're so relevant to us today. They're not just relevant to when he wrote them several thousand years ago. They actually really can actually speak to us today. And Solomon was so widely recognized in his time that actually he ended up getting a state visit from this woman, the Queen of Sheba. Now, the Queen of Sheba was an immensely powerful woman. She was like the Angela Merkel of her day. She was hugely impressed with Solomon, with his power, his wealth, and, of course, with his wisdom. But unfortunately, Solomon learnt that life without God is a bitter experience. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it's full of comments on the futility of life without God. For instance, it says in there, "I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. I have seen the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind." And then again he said, "I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. Then, what do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise like the fool will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die." And I get the impression that these words are sort of kind of written when Solomon's coming towards the end of his life. And he was the wisest man in the world, but he made decisions that ruined him. He discovered that actually life without God was meaningless. He drifted away from God, partly due to his many pagan wives. His power was dispersed between his sons in acrimony. His wealth was lost in civil war. And only his wisdom in the books that he left behind remained. He realized that power and wealth without God is meaningless. But I'd like to compare this great king of several thousand years ago with our great King Jesus. Because Jesus too had power, he had wealth, and he had wisdom. Were they the same? Were they similar to Solomon's power, wealth, and wisdom? Well, Jesus had power, but it wasn't really of this world. You see, Solomon had displayed his power by building the temple, and that took him about 7 years. The temple was then rebuilt by Zerubbabel at over 20 years, and at the time of Jesus, the temple was being remodeled by Herod the Great, and that so far had taken 46 years. Now, Jesus tore down the temple and rebuilt it in 3 days. Now, of course, he was talking about his body as the temple. But that is true power, isn't it? Jesus became weak and vulnerable. He let himself be tortured. He let himself be crucified. If you were to look at him there on the cross, you would not think of him as being a powerful individual. So outwardly, he was the least powerful man in the world. But ultimately, his power defeated death. How about his wealth? Well, he taught that wealth is temporary, of no more significance than a beautiful flower. His wealth was in another kingdom. You see, when Jesus was on earth, he lived a hand-to-mouth existence. He didn't have a home. He slept in the among the trees and on the rocks. He was reliant on other people to feed him. He did not look wealthy. And he said, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So outwardly, he was the least wealthy man in the world. But ultimately, his wealth was the whole world. What about the wisdom of King Jesus? Well, would you describe it as being wise to knowingly walk towards your death? To knowingly sort of put your hands out and go, "Here you go, handcuff me, take me to the cross." That really did not look like a sensible course of action. But ultimately, his wisdom triumphed. He actually said himself, he referred back to the visit of the Queen of Sheba, when the Queen of Sheba came to visit Solomon, to talk to Solomon, to look at Solomon's wisdom. And he actually said, "I've got greater wisdom than Solomon, and yet it's being ignored." His wisdom was not quite as obvious as Solomon's. In fact, to many, both then and now, it actually doesn't look wise at all. It looks like foolishness. Why on earth would a king voluntarily put himself on a cross to die? But it says in Corinthians, the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? You see, to us, to the world, what looks foolish is actually wisdom in God's eyes. Death and resurrection of Jesus conquered death and allowed us to have that relationship with God our Father. That is ultimate wisdom. Now, the series before this one, we were looking at the Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to be going on in the new year to look at the Sermon on the Mount a little bit more. And we'll be getting to this passage in Matthew 6. "Seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." You see, Jesus discussed the influence of power and wealth and wisdom during his Sermon on the Mount. But power and wealth and even worldly wisdom are temporary and superficial. Jesus tells us to seek first the kingdom of God. So the challenge for you this morning is, what do you seek first? When Solomon had his dream and God said to him, "I can give you one thing," and he chose wisdom rather than power over his enemies, or wealth, or a long life. When you go to God and God says, "What do you want? I'll give you one thing." What do you seek? Is it popularity? Is it health? Is it long life? Is it money? Is it influence? Is it power? What does Jesus say? Seek first his kingdom. Solomon sought first of all wisdom, and then everything else was given to him. So we should seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Now be careful, because God was not talking, or Jesus was not talking about earthly riches, earthly influence, earthly power. He was talking about much deeper eternal wealth or power or influence. It's not worldly wealth or power. It's the power to defeat death. It's treasures in heaven. And it's the foolish wisdom of God.